Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first division, second chapter, discussing sadhana bhakti and the 64 limbs of devotion with some shastric references. This is number 10. Ashwat Tulasi Datri Go Bhumi Sura Vaishnava Pujita Pranata Dhyata Shapyanti Rinam Agam. Number 10 of the 64 limbs is to show respect for the Myrobalan and fig trees, which means Amalaki and Ashwat. And this verse which we cited is from Skanda Puran. It says that the sins of men are washed away by the holy people tree, by the Tulsi tree, and by the Amalaki tree, the cow, the Brahmana, and the Vaishnavas, if they are worshipped, bowed to, and meditated upon. Of course, today is Gopastami. After class, we'll go worship the cow. Some greens and some gore and some arti. Human beings destroy sin by worshipping, respecting, and contemplating the Ashwat tree, Tulasi, Amalaki, cow, Brahman, and the Vaishnava. Now, Jiva Goswami's commentary. The Ashwat, which is commonly known as the people tree, is a symbol of one of the glories of the Lord, which means vibhuti, explained in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Ashwat brikshavaham. Briksho Ashwataham. Among Briksha trees, I am the Ashwat. And this is one of his vibhutis. And Bhumi Sura, in the Sanskrit it says, Ashwat Tulasi Datri Go Bhumi Sura. Bhumi Sura, it means that the lords of the earth. The lords of the earth, the devas of the earth are considered the brahmanas. There's many shastric references, such as this Skanda Puran is saying they're the Bhumi Sura, but now they're like Bhumi Asura. They're supposed to be, and many of them are. Bhumi Sura means that the Brahmins are the demigods on earth, gods on earth. Generally, gods are in Vaikuntha. At least the supreme god is in Vaikuntha, and then the demigods are in the celestial realm. And this is a realm of mortal beings, mrityu loka. But the Brahmins are referred to in very wonderful terms, generally in Shastra. Because the Lord has descended on earth as the benefactor and friend of the cows and the Brahmanas, they should also be worshipped by the devotees. All those other items are mentioned along with Tulsi and the Vaishnava to remove doubt about worshipping them. So for a Vaishnava, worshipping Tulsi and worshipping devotees are most important items. But for others, for the other members of society, worship of the Brahmana and cow are more familiar objects of respect. The general class of Hindus are civilized human beings, following Dharmic principles. They will take this Skanda Puran verse to mean that they'll give priority to their worship to the Brahmanas and the cows, whereas the Vaishnavas, who understand everything in relationship to Krishna. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu radhanam param tadinam samarchanam. Vaishnavas understanding scriptures in relation to their Ishtadev, specifically Lord Vishnu or Krishna, they will understand that the highest form of worship is the worship which pleases Krishna the most. Krishna is certainly pleased when we worship cows and brahmanas, but he's much more pleased when we worship Tulsi and the Vaishnavas. We may neglect to worship the cow or the brahmins, specifically to worship them, but we cannot neglect to worship Tulsi and the Vaishnavas. If we neglect or overlook the worship of Tulsi and Vaishnavas, then we will not progress in the path of bhakti, because Vishnu will not be happy. Tulsi is his dearmost devotee in the form of Brinda Devi, and also in the form of a Tulsi tree. She is a twin forms. He won't even drink a drop of water without Tulsi. It doesn't say anywhere in scriptures that Krishna won't drink a drop of water without a cow tail touching it. Or Krishna won't eat a bite of food without a cow sniffing it. But it must have a Tulsi leaf on it. And Krishna won't even take a step. Krishna won't take a step across the land of Vrindavan without wearing a Tulsi garland. And Krishna won't even accept one mala, Vaijayanti mala, unless their Tulsi Manjari is woven in it. He himself, on the day of Tulsi's appearance, he offered one prayer. Krishna Jivani Nandani Pushpasara Tulasi Vishwapavani Vishwapujita Brinda Brindavani. Krishna Jivani, that these are all words which glorify Tulsi's characteristics and her unique sevas. Tulsi is my very life, Krishna Jivani Nandani. She fills me with bliss. Krishna Jivani Nandani Pushpasara. Pushpasara, this Tulsi Maharani, Tulsi Manjari is their essence of all flowers, Pushpasara. You may have Mogra and Gulab and Parijat and so many wonderful, exotic, sweet-smelling flowers like lotus. But if there's no Tulsi Manjari mixed in that garland, I will not accept it. I will not prefer it. So we understand the preeminence of Tulsi in the worship of the Vaishnavas. Because Krishna himself says in so many places, he who says he's my devotee is not my devotee, but he who worships the Vaishnavas, I accept him as my devotee. And he shows where his position, where can Krishna be found? In the heart of the Vaishnava. Saranam ridiyam vayam, saranam ridiyatvaham. He tells Durvasa Muni in 9th canto, I am always in the heart of my devotees, and my devotees are always in my heart. So there's a very intimate and deep, strong connection between Krishna and Tulsi and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Therefore, in this list of worshipful personalities, including Myra Balantri, Amalaki, and Ashwatri people, and the Bhumi Sura, the Brahmins, and then the guy or the cows, we should consider that a Vaishnava Brahmin, one who's a Brahmin and also a Vaishnava, he is most worshipful. And among all the different types of trees, Amalaki tree and Ashwatri, Tulsi tree is the best. This is what's being said by Sri Jiva Goswami. And of course that prayer is there for the general masses of people. They say, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanitaya Cha Jagadhitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namona Jagadhitaya Krishnaya. The cow and the Brahman live in the world, live here, exist in this world for the benefit, Hita, for the benefit and promotion and health and wealth and prosperity of the human society. Jagadhitaya Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Daya. So the cows and the Brahmins, they should be worshipped. But even more importantly, we should worship the Vaishnavas. Hari Guru Vaishnava. Vaishnav Seva, Guru Seva, Hari Seva. But we don't neglect the Brahmins, and we don't neglect the cows. We respect them. And on special days, we take it. We make an extra effort to worship them. Especially on Guru Purnima. On Guru Purnima, one will worship various Brahmanas and Shiksha Gurus and Acharyas, Vedavyas and Shukadev, etc. On holy days like Gopastami and Govardhan Puja, one will also worship the cow in a very elaborate and special way. Then Jiva Goswami says, Among the other items, worship of the cow bestows the ultimate goal for the worshippers of Krishna. Gotamiya Tantra says, Gavam Kanduyanam Kuryad Go Grasam Go Pradakshinam Goshu Nityam Prasanasu Gopalopi Prasidati. This is a recommendation from the Gotamiya Tantra. One should tickle the cows. I don't know where you tickle them, but you should scratch them lovingly behind the ear and the neck, etc. And circumambulate them. Gopal is pleased when the cows are always pleased. Here it says, one should gently scratch the body of the cow. That makes a little more sense. I tickle the cow. I never heard too many cows laughing. Ha ha ha. You ever heard a laughing cow? Sometimes they have caricatures like that in cartoons, a laughing cow or They name restaurants like that, Laughing Cow or something. In America they have such crazy type things. Laughing Cow restaurant. Of course they serve cow there. Dead flesh of the cow. And they call the restaurant Laughing Cow. Interesting. And reverentially circumambulate the cow with the right side kept towards her. For if the cows are kept in nice and comfortable conditions, Lord Gopal is pleased by that. Oh, this is Rupa Goswami is explaining this tenth principle of devotion. Datri Ashwat Adi Gauravam Yata Skande. He's saying that because bhakti is all about pleasing Krishna and acting favorably for the pleasure of Krishna. Devotional service means giving happiness to Krishna. And that action which we perform to give happiness to Krishna should be done with a very favorable mind, very positive attitude. So, not only in this list of 64 limbs is Rupa Goswami describing how we can please the Lord directly by serving the deity form of the Lord, but also how to please Krishna indirectly by honoring his parts and parcels. The Bhumisura, the Devas on the earth. The Bhumisura means the Devas on earth, the Brahmanas. And very sacred and special trees. In other Puranas, it explains that the Ashwa tree is actually the Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi reside in the Ashwa tree. People do puja of Ashwa tree to appease and to make Lakshmi Narayan happy. So if you love me, love my dog. So we're trying to love Krishna, to please him, to serve him, to make him happy and act in a favorable way in that regard. We must also love all of his creations, the trees, the plants, the animals. And so the cow is given here, it's listed in Gauravam. We should serve the cow in great respect. At least in the verse it says, Ashwa Tulasi Datri Go Brahmana Vaishnava Bhumisura Vaishnava Pujita Pranata Ndayata Shapayanti Nirnam Agam. The cow is listed because she's the topmost. She's the best of all the different creatures, of all the different beasts, of all the different beasts and animals in this world. The cow is the topmost. Such an unusual form of animal. The cow is all good, all sattvic, all purifying, all beneficial. She's the universal mother. She's one of the seven mothers of the human race. The Janamata, Bhumimata, Vedamata, Gomata, Rajamata, and like this, or Rajani Mata, the wife of the king, the mother earth, the mother Veda, the mother cow. There are seven Datri Mata. The nurse is also a mother. And Janamata means our birth, the mother that gave us birth. These are the seven mothers. They must be respected. So of all the mothers, the cow is a very special form of mother. And she's the personification of the earth goddess, Bhumi. Bhumi Mata, of course, is one of the seven mothers, Mother Earth. But she takes another form as Gomata, Mother Cow. She nourishes all the living entities with her earth body. And she nourishes all the, especially the human society, with her cow body, Gomata and Bhumi Mata. She's nourishing all living entities because everyone's sustained, every living entity is sustained by the earth, sun and water, and especially human beings are sustained by the milk from the cow, at least traditionally, and Vedic society. The emphasis was given on cow protection and honoring the cow and drinking her milk and taking her ghee, etc. But she's listed as the primary animal or beast, and we should worship and honor her because she's special in the sense of what I said, but also in the by the fact that all the demigods reside in her body. As explained in the pores, in the pores in the hair follicles or pores of a cow's body, all 33 million demigods are residing there. All the Upadevas, all the Mukhyadevas, the primary demigods and secondary demigods, Indra, Chandra, Surya, Vishnu, Shiva, Varuna, Chandra, everyone, they're all residing. They have their residence. They have their place of residence in the body of the cow. So if we respect the cow and treat her very nicely, then all the demigods will be very happy with us. We disrespect the cow and offend her, then the demigods will also be upset. She plays a very crucial role for the happiness and peace of human society. And ultimately, because it's bhakti, this is a whole discussion about bhakti, everything should be traced to the pleasure of Gopal. Gopal Toshanam, Govinda Toshanam, the happiness and satisfaction of Gopal. Is this action pleasing to Gopal? Is this action pleasing to Govinda? It gives him happiness? It makes him pleased? Yes, it does. Because that's what Rupa Goswami is telling us. Rupa Goswami is telling us 64 different actions and practices which give pleasure to Gopal. So if we observe these, then we can call ourselves a bhakta, Gopal bhakta, Govinda bhakta, because we're trying to act in such a way to bring pleasure to the Lord. The 11th limb of devotion is Atta Sri Krishna Vimukha Jana Sangatyago, Sangatyago, which means shunning the association of those who are averse to Sri Krishna. This is number 11. Sri Krishna Vimukha Jana Sangatyag. And there's a verse here from the Katyayani Samhita to illustrate this point. Varamhuta Vahadwala Panjarantar Vyavastiti Nishori Chinta Vimukha Jana Samvasa Vaishasam. The Katyayana Samhita says, giving up the association of those opposed to Krishna, and gives an analogy, it is preferable to live within a cage of blazing fire than to have the misfortune of living in association with persons who are opposed to thinking of the Lord. It is better to live in a burning cage than but one must never invite ruin by living in company of one who is averse to the thoughts about Lord Sri Krishna. Well, if a lot of devotees in the world were to apply this verse and to live by this verse, then the divorce courts would be jammed to the max. Because there are so many husbands and wives, one party or the other, who's actually openly, overtly, if not covertly, averse to thoughts of Krishna. So by the standard of this verse, then the husband or wife should abandon such a unfavorable partner at the earliest. Because to continue to live with such a partner is, it's better that one lives in a cage of burning fire. In other words, that's not a very good idea because you'll burn up. If you go into a cage, which you go into a box, which is full of burning fire, then you'll be consumed, you'll be destroyed, burned up. So it spells doom. So similarly, your bhakti becomes consumed or burned up by living in a house with the anti-party, with someone who's against Krishna, averse to Krishna. So this is the 11th principle, to give up the association of those who are averse to Sri Krishna. How to practically apply that in the modern world, that is a little bit of a delicate issue. Because in Indian families, divorce is not so much possible. It goes on, but it's very problematic. Somehow, someone has to withdraw one way or another from such association, take deeper and more concentrated shelter of the Lord. And then this is such an important point that in this particular point, which is the 11th point, a devotion, giving up the association of those who are against Krishna. Sri Krishna Vimukha, Jana, Jana means person. Vimukha means their faces away, their faces against. Their face is against Sri Krishna, their opinion. Their opinions and mind and outlook is against Krishna. They should be Sangha Tyag. Their association should be given up, renounced. Whether you renounce them mentally or renounce them emotionally, of course best is you renounce them physically, emotionally, and mentally. But in some form, in one way or another, they should be renounced, and there should be some distance kept between such unfavorable association. But as I mentioned, most of these 64 points, Rupa Goswami only cites one reference, one verse as Shastra Praman. But in this regard, he gives two verses, which indicates that it's a fairly important point. Here's the second reference verse. This is from Vishnu Rahasya. Alinganam varamanye vyala vyagra chalokasam nasanga shali yuktanam nana devaikya sevinam. I don't know who's speaking here, but someone says, I consider it preferable to embrace Alinganam, a snake, a tiger, or a crocodile, than to associate with those who worship the demigods. Demigod worshippers are bearers of spears, piercing me with their deviant desires. So in the first reference point, he says, I'd rather to associate with those that are against the Lord. This means Pashandis. Vashandis and Gnostics, atheists and non-believers, materialistic people. To associate with them is like burning up in a cage of fire. He says it's better to stay in a cage of burning fire than to associate with these people that are against the Lord. Sri Krishna Vimukhajana, their face is against the Lord, and they're vilifiers. Their vilifiers are blasphemers of the Lord. In the second reference verse, he says, okay, they may be pious people, they may believe in the Godhead, but they prefer to worship secondary divinities, the rulers of this mundane realm. They actively choose to worship the demigods, because I understand the demigods will fulfill their material desires, which Vishnu Rahasya calls deviant desires. Because material desires, they deviate us from God, because they absorb us in the material body, which keeps us in a samsara. So these are deviant desires produced from a devious mentality of enjoyment rather than a mentality of seva, a mentality of exploitation rather than a mentality of dedication. So this is deviation, this is deviousness. So rather than associating with a demigod worshipper, one should better wrestle an alligator. Go embrace a crocodile or a cobra. Or if that doesn't suit you, then if you don't have much rapport with crocodiles and cobras, then you can have a third choice. You get your options here. You can embrace a tiger. They're nice and furry and has some nice stripes on the side. Because you may be more the dry type. If you want to embrace an alligator, you have to go in the water. Maybe you don't like a wet relationship, you'd rather have a dry relationship. If you want a dry relationship, earthbound, then you can embrace a snake. Of course, it's a little slimy. Maybe you don't like slimy relationships. But if you like something furry and fuzzy, which most people do, furry coats and fuzzy coats, then you can embrace a tiger. There's some nice racing stripes on the side. But could be problematic, though, because the favorite food of tigers is human beings. So that embrace may be your last supper. Or you may be the last supper for the tiger. Or you're maybe, whatever. So he's saying there that this is, he's saying, I prefer this rather than associate with a demigod worshiper. So that's the 11th principle of devotion. Now the 12th principle, 12th through 14th, they're listed here. Shishyad Yananu van Ditvari Trayam Yata Saptami. Renouncing all three. Once you renounce these three, renouncing all desire for recruiting disciples. Here it says, attachment to disciples and the following two items illustrated in the seventh canto. Then there's a verse from seventh canto, chapter 13, verse 8. The shishyan anubhatnita grantan naivab yasid bahun navyakyam upayunjita naramban aravet kvachit. This is Narada Muni addressing King Yudhisthira, because in the seventh canto, Narada Muni, in a few chapters, he describes ashram dharma and varna dharma. What are the activities for the Brahman, sannyasi, kshatriya, etc., brahmachari? Brahmachari, gurukule, vasantanta, gurohitam. There are different verses there about the behavior and actions of the brahmachari and sannyasi. So here, on that seventh canto where he's talking about varna and ashram dharma, this verse is describing ashram dharma, the duties and actions of a sannyasi, who is the fourth level of ashram, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. He's saying a sannyasi must not be eager to make unqualified disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read books that disrespect the Lord or give discourses as a means of livelihood, which also includes defeating others in argument. He should not engage in big projects which distract him from his spiritual goals. The other translation here, a renunciate must not, out of greed, make many disciples, nor should a renunciate study numerous works that have nothing to do with God, nor should he earn his living by expounding the sacred books, like Bhagavad Sapta. And lastly, he must not engage himself in any work likely to turn him away from the divine values. That's very nice. Jiva Goswami's comment, he says that the injunction here from the seventh canto by Narada Muni, which is included as the 12th limb of devotion, renouncing all desire for recruiting disciples with the subsequent praman from Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami says this injunction, as regards to not making many disciples, applies only to those saints who have adopted the way of living in seclusion, which means bhajananandi sadhus, babajis. But it does not apply to such sadhus, which means sannyasis, who have chosen missionary work for spreading the message of bhakti. In proof of this, Jiva points out that Narada Muni himself and other sages had thousands and thousands of disciples. If anybody is to stop from making disciples, the sampradaya or the sect and a particular school of approach to God realization will become extinct. Besides refraining from making disciples will land one into the guilt of being misery, of bequeathing one's knowledge, of not bequeathing one's knowledge to others. All that is said in this injunction is that one must desist from making numerous disciples if one is not sufficiently qualified, and also if the disciples are not qualified for initiation. Mukunda Das Goswami, in this regard, points out that the problem with the large number of disciples is that having lots of disciples creates extraneous desires for gain, honor, and establishment of one's reputation, lobh, puja, and pratishtha, and these cause relaxation of one's bhakti sadhana. So one may get more absorbed in his disciples and the puja and pratishtha and distinction of having so many that he neglects his own sadhana bhakti, his own bhajan. By forbidding the study of secular literature, which means non-spiritual literature, the pure secular aesthetics is also forbidden. And by prohibiting earning one's living by exposition of the sacred books, entering into controversial discussions with others is also prohibited. So this is important here. This is the number 15th principle, which is Vyavahare Pyakarpanyam, avoidance of ungenerous behavior. Don't be miserly. Be liberal. Be open. Be generous. 15. Not feeling miserable and not performing degrading acts in distressing circumstances. This is illustrated in the Padma Puran. And the Padma Puran says, Alabde va vanashteva bhakshyaschadana sarane aviklava matir bhutva harameva dhya smaret. Being undisturbed when one does not attain food or clothing, and when these things are lost, one should remember the Lord with one's intelligence. So if someone steals your clothes or steals your food, then don't be upset. Say, Hare Krishna. It's time to be a Nagnabhava. Time to be a Digambara. Digambara sadhu. The Jains, in the Jain tradition, they have the Tyagi sadhus are called Digambaras. Digambara tradition. In Jain religion, they walk around naked, except they cover their mouth. They don't cover anything else, but they cover their mouth. Because they don't want to breathe in any living entities. But they should also cover their feet. They may step on some. They wear a cloth on their feet also. At any rate, the whole idea is to be patient, tolerant, and gain or loss. If we don't get any food or clothing, okay, no problem. If we get some, or we lose whatever we have and we lose it, no problem. So this Jiva Goswami says, this injunction applies to the devotee practicing smaranam. So the idea, one who's doing smaranam, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, parasevanam, remembering the Lord, he must maintain the tranquility of his mind, irregardless of the external circumstances. If he's meditating on the Lord's pastimes, nam smaran, lila smaran, guna smaran, remembering his qualities, and then he's thinking, oh, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten for 2 days. Then his mind will become disturbed and his smaran will be broken. It's called vikshep, distraction. So one must be very much equipoised in order to do this lima smaranam, which is also part of sadhana. It's called raganuga sadhana. Vaidhi sadhana, raganuga sadhana. So Raghunuga sadhana, of course, begins generally with the qualification of nishtha. At the level of nishtha, one is sufficiently tranquil and equipoised, so he won't be disturbed by so much gain or loss or profit or adoration and all these things. Food or no food, clothes or no clothes, he'll be peaceful. The devotee absorbed in service, however, will perform service corresponding to the materials he obtains. So the devotee on the Vaidhi platform who is doing external service with his body and senses, he requires food. No bhojan, no bhajan. They have this phrase in Hindi. No bhojan. If you don't eat, you can't do bhajan. So that's for the active, someone who's doing active service. But smaranam, Vishnu smaranam, or Radha Krishna Leela smaranam, this is passive. This is passive service. It doesn't depend on body, it depends on mind. So there's not so much need for food and clothing and all these things. But if one is serving externally in the active world of Vaidhi Sadhana, with the senses, then it requires food and clothing. In the absence of these things, that will be a disturbance to his service. But in Smaranam, the absence of food or clothing should not be a disturbance. And one is warned that he should not be disturbed. The devotee performing external service will make efforts to obtain such items as food and clothing if these items are not present, instead of simply remaining indifferent to loss or lack of those items. It should be understood that this injunction also means that he should not perform low actions with prominence of begging and such. In other words, he's doing Leela Smaranam, and if he's becomes disturbed by want of food, then he goes around begging half the day, then that will also disturb his smaranam. Even the madhukari sadhus, or the vairagis that do madhukari and beg small portion of food, they're also restricted how much they can accept. They're supposed to go to seven houses, and maximum seven houses, no more, no less. If they have an appetite for 20 chapatis, and they go to seven houses and they only get one chapati each, that's it for that day. One time, seven houses maximum. So they might be thinking, oh, I only got seven chapatis. I need 20. How will I do my smaran? So they're really not fit. So this Rupa Goswami is saying this 15th principle, one should not feel miserable if he doesn't attain food or clothing, or if he loses those things. He should remember the Lord with one's intelligence. So this is why Jiva Goswami says this remembering aspect means smaran. Those are engaged in smarananga bhajan. This is a limb of bhajan, anga bhajananga, a limb of devotion called smaranam, which is the primary activity of those devotees on the level of raganuga sadhana. They should be somewhat atmaram, self-satisfied with whatever they have, and go on with their internal meditation. And don't depend on all these external items like food and clothing even. Because you don't need those to do smaran, because you're just sitting in your kutir. If you're doing active service, you're going out, you're doing deity service, and you're going outside the temple to pick flowers or collect foodstuffs and boga in the market, you can't go, and someone steals your clothes off the line. You know, I have a gamsha, one dhoti, and one kurta, and you have vaidhi sadhaka, and someone comes and steals your kurta and dhoti, and then your gamsha, and then your kopins. Well, now what will you do? How will you go to the forest and pick flowers? How will you go to the marketplace and procure fruits and vegetables for Thakurji's seva? You can't do. So your service will be impaired. So Jiva Goswami says if he loses these items, then he has to go and replace them so his service can go on. But if you go bathing, and while you're bathing in Radhakund, if the monkey takes, you have all your clothes in the bag, the monkey grabs all your clothes and runs away, then you say, oh, okay. You walk back naked to your kutir, close the door and do your smaran without any clothes. And then, of course, the word will get around. Hey, I haven't seen Krishnadas Baba for some time. I don't see him coming out here and there in the Bhagavat Pat or whatever, associating. Well, actually, he has no clothes. He can't come out. Oh, okay, let's give him a dhoti. Let's give him a kurta. And then Krishna will arrange without any separate endeavor. Krishna will arrange for you to replace your stolen clothes or lost clothes. But one should not be attached or worry about it. And it's not needed on that level of sadhana. We'll continue there with the 16th principle tomorrow, which is not being controlled by lamentation or other emotions. Which it's interesting how he arranges the sequence here, because this is verse 1-2-1, first division, second chapter, verse 115. discussing 16th principle, there's kind of a connection, because the 15th principle is don't be disturbed over losing something physical. You lose food or clothing, or don't have food or clothing, that's physical. So don't worry about it. Then also don't be disturbed by your situation of your mind. Your mind may be lamenting, or some emotions, untoward emotions may play in your mind. I want you not be influenced by them. One should, again, stay equipoised, peaceful. So that will be discussed tomorrow. Oh, it's interesting in this other commentary here on the same verse about avoiding ungenerous behavior or not being disturbed when one fails to get one's necessities. And this Banmaraj is telling his purport. The relevance of this shloka from Padma Purana on the above anga, or aspect of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, will appear when one sees people losing the sweetness of their temper at not being able to make two ends meet so as to keep the body and soul together. So the Vaidhi Sadhaka, because of the fragile situation of his attachment, his mind is subject to anger, the dualities of happiness and distress. So it's very important for him to keep the peace in this environment. Keep a sufficient flow of food and clothing, otherwise he'll crack. So then he'll lose the sweetness of his temper. A distinction is made between Smarana Marg and Archan Marg. In a Smarana Marg, which means Smarana Angabhajan, constant meditation on and remembrance of the eternal transcendental pastimes of Sri Krishna with his own associates in the aprakrit or supra-mundane realm in the stage of Raghunuga Bhakti is actuated by a spontaneous outflow of the heart toward the spiritual values relating to the Lord. So therefore we don't require, as I mentioned, so much clothing, food, etc. There's not much concern about that on the Rag Marg. But in Archan Marg, or Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, one is concerned with the Prakrit world, through which, by long practice, he reaches the Smarana Marg, or the way of inward realization, or internal meditation. So that's just a little bit more elaborate way of saying, or summarizing or repeating what we've already said about this point.